There's no reason why that couldn't be your story.
You don't have an expiration date.
Oh, I love that. This is the Authors and Agents Podcast.
Kristen, I'm super excited to have you here today. Look at this beautiful book. That's so, so good. So this is your first book, baby, Seven Rules for Breaking Hearts. Can you tell me a little bit about this one?
Yes, I can. So Seven Rules for Breaking Hearts is a contemporary romantic comedy about a commitment phobic podcaster who sort of sets out to break all her own dating rules during a 2-week vacation leading up to her best friend's wedding. It's a little bit sort of modern take on How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, a little bit inspired by podcasts like Call Her Daddy and things like that. It just was a whole bunch of ideas that kind of came together. So,
so good. It is. I remember reading it and like not being able to put it down. It's definitely got a great balance of everything you want in a rom-com book. But you've got another one coming out this year, coming out in August, called Given Our History. So tell me a little bit about that one that's coming up.
Yeah, so that one, it's funny. Seven Rules was such a one-off for me that I just kind of had this idea and had to write it. Given Our History is a little closer to my heart. It's kind of a cozy autumn, light academia, second chance romance. It's told in two timelines about best friends who met at sleepaway camp during their teen years and then reunite as history professors working in the same department as adults. So yeah, it's a different sort of novel than Seven Rules for sure. It's a little bit less comedy, a little bit more like solidly in the romance genre. But I love it. I'm super excited for it to be out in the world.
It is on my Kindle right now. It's on my list. I can't wait to get into it. I'm excited for you and for all these great things that you have going on. So you've got book number 2 coming out in the world. Tell me a little bit about your journey to this point through publication.
Sure. So I actually never really planned to write romance. I definitely have like the kind of typical story of, a lot of authors say, oh, I've always wanted to be an author ever since I was a kid or since I was 13, 14, that was definitely me. However, I was very determined to be a fantasy author for most of my life. I see. Still one of the genres of my heart. I love fantasy. But when I was first kind of looking into queering, first really getting serious about trying to break into the industry, I felt like writing romance was one of my kind of shortcomings, that like I would write these stories and I would really shy away from writing about the romantic connection between the characters. And so I wrote my first romance to sort of just break out of my shell a little bit. And then I ended up thinking, why don't I go ahead and query for this? I wrote a whole book. And that wasn't Seven Rules. That was a different book that unfortunately never made it to publication. But I did get my agent with that book. And that's sort of how I ended up down the romance rabbit hole. And I've come to love romance just as much as fantasy. They're both really fun genres to write for their own reasons. So
definitely. And right now that romancy is such a big trend. Maybe that can be in your future someday, right? You can combine the two.
Yes, that's very much on my radar right now, I will say. I have some things in the works, but publishing takes its time, so
it does indeed take its sweet, sweet time. So tell me a little bit about how you approached queering. So you wrote that book, that didn't make it to publication, but how, what was your game plan as you went into the queering process?
I guess maybe I'm a little weird about this. I like writing query letters.
I know that, like, that
so many people don't enjoy the querying process. And I obviously, when you're actually in the querying trenches and you're getting those rejections, like, that part's not fun at all. But I come from sort of a marketing background. So I've always really liked kind of just like the technical aspects of putting together a query. And so when I decided to query that book, it was just, I made a list. I used Manuscript Wishlist and kind of compiled a list of agents that I felt like would be really interested in something along the lines of what I had written based on things that were more specific than just genre, you know, specific tropes, things like that. And so I made that list and I kind of organized it by priority. And my agent that I have now, Amy Stapp, was actually the one that was at the top of the list. And I just, like, I had a feeling that she would really like the book that I had written at the time based off of what her manuscript wish list said. So I queried a few other agents, got full requests. So I felt like that was a positive response. And that's kind of how I worked up the courage to send it to her. And yeah, it was actually, with that book, it was a very short querying process. I had a previous fantasy novel I had written when I first started querying that was a very long, not very fun querying process. Mm-hmm. For the romance, it went a little bit smoother. but yeah, so I want to say it was like, I maybe was querying for like 2 months before I decided to send it to her. And then when I did send it to her, I heard back in like a week and a half or something like that. So yeah, then it just kind of, everything started moving a little more quickly from there, it felt like.
Yeah, she's definitely a top tier agent, dream agent. She's wonderful.
Yeah, she is. She's great.
So what would your, looking back now on that journey and your experience that you have, what would your like top tip be for other authors who are querying right now?
So one thing that I'm very aware of when I give people querying advice is I was querying in 2020. It was a little bit different. I've heard a lot of people say that like to sit and wait on those like initial responses to your query isn't as easy as it was even just 4 years ago, because, you know, people are getting ghosted on their queries a lot more. People are getting ghosted on full requests. So my advice at this point focuses a lot more on the query letter itself. I always tell people, I think there's a lot of value in like true heartfelt personalization, you know, not just saying I'm querying you because you represent romance, because that should be true of every agent you're querying, but actually finding something that you kind of connect with them on a personal level. That alone, I feel like really makes you stand out from the slush pile. I did some freelance query letter editing for a while, and I can say like out of the hundreds I edited, maybe like 1 or 2% of people actually kind of got the personalization part right. And so when they did, it really stood out a lot, I felt.
Yeah, that definitely is something that I think agents take into consideration, because it shows that you did your research, that you've looked into them more than just, oh, they exist at this literary agency on this website, right? Like you've done a little bit to try and do that first step to be like, oh, are we going to gel well? Is this going to be like the right partnership?
Yes, exactly.
I think that's great advice. And yeah, better, a more like, a more, I'm trying to think of what the right word to say, but like that is actually something you could focus on and do in the querying process rather than just like be patient and wait, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I like a little, I'm the kind of person, I love actionable advice. Like,
yes, actionable advice. So. Yes. So what is something that you hope readers take away from Seven Rules for Breaking Hearts?
Oh gosh, that's a big question. you know, one thing about Seven Rules to Breaking Hearts that means a lot to me personally is I did write a very flawed heroine. Margot is a little rough around the edges. And so I think, you know, one of the core themes of Seven Rules to Breaking Hearts is that everyone deserves to kind of find that love and happiness on their own time. Everyone's going to have their own journey of personal growth. And, you know, yeah, I'm very passionate about kind of the atypical romance heroines. You know, I love seeing the girl that's just a little bit rough around the edges find love at the end of the day.
I think she's a very real love, you know, like main character in the sense that like a real person is very flawed in their own way. Like uniquely we all are and have our own struggles and issues. So I enjoyed that aspect of her for sure. And yeah, there'll be people out there who aren't used to reading romances with a little bit of a flawed main character. And so I think that'll be enjoyable. Yeah, something fresh, definitely. So when you love to read for pleasure, who are some of your favorite authors?
That's a hard question. I'm kind of all over the place. My I guess my classic answer to this question, and it's very boring, would be Tolkien, just because that was kind of like my first literary love, The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. But as far as more modern authors, I'm a big fan of Leigh Bardugo. And then in the romance genre, Trish Dollar, I really love her books. Julia Whelan, I know a lot of people know her as an audiobook narrator, My Oxford Year is like one of my favorite, but I love that book so much, even though it's a very heart-wrenching romance. that actually was one of the books that kind of motivated me to push myself to write romance, was I read that book and I was like, oh my gosh, it's just dragged so many emotions out of me. And so I wanted to try and dabble a little bit in the genre, just to kind of get myself comfortable with those emotions being on the page. Donna Tartt is another one, which that's totally separate genre again, but she's an all-time favorite for me.
I think you can have them favorite authors in every genre you want, right? Like, you don't have to just read one. I think that's awesome. Yeah. Thank you for sharing those. So looking back on your writing journey and in crucial periods of when you maybe were switching genres, or you were querying your fantasy novel and it was taking a very long time, right? Like maybe a little bit down on like your motivation or your confidence. What is something you would, like a piece of advice you'd want to share with your younger self?
Oh gosh, that.
I'm hitting you with all the hard ones right now.
You know, I don't know that I necessarily have advice for my younger self that my younger self didn't already kind of follow. One of the big things I always tell people is just, if you're querying, if you're kind of going through that, find something else to work on. Don't just query and then sit there and wait and be refreshing your inbox. And, you know, guys, that's kind of like torturing yourself a little bit. I always have felt very strongly about, like, you send out those queries, you start the next project. And, you know, if you, querying doesn't go the way you hoped, then you already have this other project that you're passionate about and that's almost ready by the time you're deciding that, you know, you might have to. I've had to shelve things a lot, so this is kind of like my philosophy, is always be working on the next thing.
Yes.
So I guess, yeah, that would be the advice I'd give to my younger self, even though my younger self was pretty diligent about that. I would just reinforce it.
Yes, I think that is great advice. And I know some people have a hard time breaking away from the querying of a one story and starting something new. But I found in my experience, the same as you, like that has been crucial for like just keeping going and not being, stuck in maybe a frustrating place. But it's always a good motivation too. Like, okay, once I'm done, I can query this and then I can move on to something else. Like that's always, cause I mean, there's always so many ideas I want to work on. So it's like, okay, here we go, moving on.
Yeah, exactly.
So my next question is two parts. I'd love to know what you most enjoy about writing, and then what is the most challenging thing about the actual act of writing for you?
Okay. So as far as what I most enjoy about writing, I guess I kind of have two answers to that question. I really enjoy kind of exploring the psychology, for lack of a better word, of getting into somebody else's head that I don't necessarily always have that much in common with. I love writing all kinds of different main characters. And so for me, part of the fun is kind of the discovery of how would this person respond to this situation.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I really, really enjoy is like setting descriptions and creating like this really vivid feeling. Like even if you haven't been to that location, kind of feeling like you are getting a little bit of a trip in a book. I love traveling. I love seeing different places and trying to capture like some of those little nuances that you really only would experience when you're there. I get like a lot of gratification out of doing that, I guess. And then the second part of the question was the hardest part? I don't really know. I go back and forth between whether it's that first draft and actually getting everything on the page, or whether it's editing. Because when I'm drafting, I always wish I was editing. When I'm editing, I always wish I was drafting.
So it depends on which stage you are in. That depends on what's the hardest.
Yeah, I just got done drafting a new project like a month ago. And while I was drafting, I was like, I forgot how terrible drafting is. I wish I was editing right now. And now I'm in the editing phase and I'm like, this part isn't necessarily fun either. Don't get me wrong. Like, I enjoy it, but it is hard when you're working with, you know, 80,000, 90,000 words and you have all these moving parts. It gets overwhelming sometimes. So
definitely. Yeah. The hardest part of writing is whatever part you're doing right at that time, depending on what stage you're in. That is true. So I feel like I already know the answer to this question, but if you were to genre hop, what is another genre that you would love to try writing?
So yes, I definitely, my dream genre is fantasy. But I'm also a chronic genre hopper. Cause I've dabbled a little bit in horror and thriller and, women's fiction. You know, I actually sometimes have a problem with getting my books to fit into one genre because I want to pull from all these different ideas. And so distilling it down and getting it to fit into one genre is more of a challenge than switching between genres, if that at all makes sense.
It does indeed. You want all of them to have a little piece of every part of the genres that you love, right?
Yeah.
When, exactly. For marketing purposes, it's easiest to stick with one.
Yep. So yeah, my focus right now is hopefully to kind of move into the fantasy, romantasy kind of realm. But, you know, probably eventually one day I'll have a horror book out there or something, you know.
Yes. Give your readers. Yourself. Yeah. Give your readers a little bit of everything. There's nothing wrong with that. So who throughout your writing journey has been like your biggest supporter?
It's okay. I want to give fair credit to everyone. It's varied at different stages of my life. But as far as once I got serious about this as a career, my husband has been absolutely amazing. He's just had faith in me since day one. And, you know, we spend our drives going places, brainstorming constantly. Every time I get, you know, feedback from my agent or my editor, he'll sit there and go over it with me and we'll kind of brainstorm together. You know, it sounds weird to admit as an author, but I think he is better at recognizing plot holes than I am. Mm-hmm. So I'm very reliant on him for that. And, you know, whenever I have those moments of feeling like, oh, this is so hard, you know, I feel like it's just fighting an uphill battle every step of the way. He's the one that's always there saying, no, you have to keep doing this. You have to keep, like, look at how far you've come. Now keep pushing, keep going. So yeah, he's definitely been my biggest supporter.
That's the best. And I think too, my husband is that way, where he is not a reader. He doesn't really read books, not a writer, knows nothing about, you know, any of this, but he is the best at that, at spotting plot holes or things that don't make sense. So I'm always like trying to get him to read things. It doesn't really work out. I have to hand him like 4 pages at a time to not overwhelm him, but he is really good to talk to in that way. And I love that he's your biggest supporter. I mean, it's so important to have somebody, especially at home, if you have others at home with you who are supportive of it, because it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort, you know, solo to do this job.
Definitely. Yeah. And my husband, for the record, is not a huge reader either. He's just, I guess it's from consuming other media. Like, where do they get so good at recognizing the plot holes? I don't know. But, and then a lot of the time I end up being his personal audiobook narrator with my books, where he wants me to just read it out loud to him.
Oh, I love it.
So we've done that a few times, but yeah.
That's good. Yeah. You guys have your read aloud time. That's very important. Well, I just have a couple of questions left for you. So when you're writing, or maybe when you have a little break, you're taking your writing break, like what's your favorite like fuel snack or drink that you have when you're in the zone?
I am a Coke Zero drinker.
There you go.
Also coffee, but I have to stay stocked up on the Coke Zeros because they're just real easy. Go downstairs and grab one out of the fridge. Yeah. I live on caffeine, like many authors. I think it's more surprising when an author says they don't live on caffeine.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But yeah, that's kind of my go-to. And then like, as far as snacks or food, I love doing like a little like cucumber salad is kind of one of my absolute favorite things to eat while I'm writing. And just kind of like take a couple bites, set it aside, write a little more, take a few more bites. Those are like my go-to. I'm good. Cucumber salad, Coke Zero.
What do you put in the cucumber salad? Because I love a good cucumber salad.
It's like a weird mix because a lot of the time I call it a Greek salad. I grew up with like a German cucumber salad that was, it's kind of just cucumbers, onions, tomatoes, and then like vinegars and things like that. And then I had Greek salad at like a couple restaurants growing up. And so like this weird fusion happened where it's like, it's kind of the German salad with just the dill and the vinegar and all that, but then I add feta cheese.
Oh, yum. But I mean, that sounds amazing.
I don't really know what to call it. I'm like, is it a Greek salad? Is it a cucumber salad? Like, I don't know. But it's like my go-to, and I'll make like a massive bowl of it too. Like, not a little bowl. Like, it's gotta be a lot.
Well, it sounds refreshing and delicious. And then now I'm craving it and I'm going to need to make myself. I remember loving for a while, like, cucumbers and apple cider vinegar and like some seasonings in it. That was really, really yummy. But I feel like also there was like a TikTok cucumber salad that was like went viral a couple years ago with like garlic chili paste or.
That sounds familiar. Yeah. I always save the TikTok recipes and then I forget to make them most of the time.
But I remember making that one and it was very good.
I was just going to say, so I just remembered to make a cabbage soup the other day that I saw on TikTok, and I was like, you know, I'll give that a try. And now I've made it like 3 days. I made it like 3 days in a row, and my husband wants me to make it again today. So I'm just like, all right, we live on cabbage now, I guess. Cabbage and cucumber. That was not the intention.
I'm sure you did not plan that one, but yeah, cabbage soup is so yummy. I love cabbage soup. I recently just, my husband and I are, you know, changing up what we eat a little bit. And so trying new recipes, and new recipes are not always good, especially having four kids, like they don't always love the things that we eat. And I made one the other day that I was not expecting to like be a hit, but everyone like scarfed it down and wanted more. And they were like, it was egg roll. It was like an egg roll in a bowl sort of recipe. They were obsessed with it. And I was like, okay, this is a winner. We're adding it to the weekly rotation, which was nice to find one that was like a success.
Yeah, that's my husband and I, we have a struggle with that because I'm like very much a lot of the time a veggie person and he's more of a meat person. And so it's like a lot of the time for dinner, he'll be like, oh, I was thinking we'll make ribs. And I'm like, what am I going to eat? Because I'll have like maybe like one or two ribs, but then I want to have like on the side, like give me some roasted broccoli or something.
So we got to have it be well-rounded. I love broccoli. I love lately adding like nutritional yeast on my vegetables. So like I do like really crispy Brussels sprouts with nutritional yeast and like paprika and garlic powder and onion powder. It is so good. I even got my stepdad to eat them. He does not eat anything green. Literally ever. He's
not.
Does
it change the texture or like what is it?
Not really change the texture. It just has such like an earthy, almost cheesy flavor. Without being cheese, and like we're trying not to do dairy. It is so, so good. Like I add nutritional yeast on every vegetable now and it's like game changer. I love it.
I'll have to try that.
You will. You should. It's really, really good. I'm definitely a fan of it. Well, I love snack food. I love talking food. But my last question is about books. I'd love to know what your favorite book is right now. This is not your favorite book of all time. This is not the best book ever. Just something you've read recently that you were like, that was really good. I want other people to know about it.
Oh, gosh. So my answer to this is probably, I guess, a little generic, or it's one that a lot of people have already heard of. But in January, the first or maybe second book I picked up was The Cruel Prince. I had like neglected it for years. And I just kind of finally decided I was going to give it a read, and I ended up binging the whole trilogy.
At least like, it was all out and you could have binged the whole trilogy, right?
Within like 3 or 4 days, like I just went through all three books. And it was funny because when I first picked it up, I was a little bit skeptical. I was like, I know it's called The Cruel Prince, but I was like, he's kind of just bullying her. And then I just ended up getting so invested in like the politics and the world and everything. And I haven't stopped thinking about it. Like, I've been almost in like a reading slump for over a month since, because like I'll start to read something else and I'm just like, maybe I want to reread The Cruel Prince. So yeah, that's my current book obsession, but it'll probably be something else in next month, hopefully.
It'll pass. Isn't that the worst though? When you read something that's just so good that then everything else you read after compares to it and you're like,
I feel bad. Like I've made myself just like DNF things lately because it's like, all right, I just need to set this aside. And because I'm obviously like still so fixated on this series that I'm not getting invested in things the way I probably would if I read it with like a totally fresh perspective where I wasn't obsessing over another series. So yeah, I've got a long TBR right now that is like, I'm not making my way through it at all. So
that's all right. Give yourself time. Give yourself time. But I love that. I haven't read that series either, but I love that you're like, oh, he's just being mean to her. That sort of sounds like what he's, that sounds like who he is, right?
I know, I should have taken it at face value, but there was like one of the first, at least one of the first things that stuck out in my brain is like, I think he kicked like dirt in her sandwich. And I was
like, rude.
I was like, this is the romance that everyone was rooting for? Like, I'm a little confused. And I've heard people say, like, you know, the book isn't a romance. So I did go into it, like, with that forewarning, at least. But yeah, I was still a little bit taken aback. Like, I thought maybe he was more politically cruel, not just, like,
actually. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And thank you for letting me, you know, pick your brain and get to know you. I'm hope everybody goes and picks up Seven Rules for Breaking Hearts, but also pre-orders, given our history. It comes out August 27th of this year. I'm so excited for you.
Thank you so much for having me.